all looking a bit tired today, guys. What's up? I mean, I know Hannah and I have had a busy few days with going out and seeing people and presenting, but producer Martin, why are you looking quite so tired?
Well, I've got heavy bags under my eyes. I'm wearing a Bob Dylan t-shirt, which might suggest that I've just gone and seen the great man himself. Well, I say I saw him. You don't actually get to see him. There were people in the audience with binoculars trying to see if they could see him perched over the top of a cymbal hi-hat or something like that. He's just very enigmatic.
How old is Bob Dylan now?
84 years young.
Wow.
So, yeah, maybe, I don't know, just couldn't find his way up to the stage.
Hello, I'm Tom Spencer.
I'm Hannah Clark.
I'm Charlotte Fawkes-Reese. And welcome to The Ag Show.
Second week in on this new podcast, and the bosses haven't told us to stop.
I'm taking that as a compliment.
Coming up, after a certain Caleb Cooper decided to broaden his horizons down under, we're going to be talking gap years.
It's something of a rite of passage for those of us involved in agriculture. I know I did one.
Me too.
As did our guest, Charlie, who ended up having an extended stay.
I swear, within about 3 hours of landing, I knew that 6 months just wasn't going to be long enough.
We'll also hear from someone who made the trip in reverse, a Kiwi called Ethan, who's currently farming in Worcestershire.
It's always interesting to see how life is over here, how things are done differently or what they, and you know, hopefully people will, if they do it properly, take a little bit back home with them as well from some of their learnings.
And milk prices have slumped of late. We'll get the lowdown on what that means for our dairy farmers across the UK.
It's quite a painful period, but we are lucky to have our foot in the organic. So the sister business will very much be holding the hand of the other one for this period.
New episodes of The Ag Show drop every Wednesday at midday, available wherever you get your podcasts.
With audio and now video versions of every show, just subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode.
And please do get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. Comment on any of our social posts or email agshow@ahgb.org.uk.
So without further ado, let's get into the main meat of the show. It's time to do the news. Charlotte, what have you got for us this week?
Yeah, so we had some big news from the University of Nottingham last week. The institution has announced plans to suspend its historic agriculture BSc degree at the Sutton Bonington campus, a course that's been shaping farming education since the 1800s. The university says the move is part of its Future Nottingham restructuring programme, citing low demand and financial pressures. Current students will finish their studies, but no new enrolments will be taken for the 2026-27 academic year. Tom, what have you been up to and what have you been reading?
We've had some exciting news from Germany. It's been Agritechnica. That happens every 2 years. Biggest ag machinery show in the world. So a few announcements from some of the top world brands. New Holland has presented a hybrid telehandler combining electric drive with compressed natural gas to reduce energy use. Silo King has released a 510 horsepower self-propelled mixer wagon built for large units feeding around 2,000 cows. New Holland has expanded its T7 range with a new XD model, delivering up to 435 horsepower. Tadus, I hope I'm pronouncing that one right, has entered the electric tractor market with a 160 horsepower model featuring fast, swappable 200 kilowatt hour battery packs. Class has updated its Axion 9 series with a larger, higher spec cab and broad comfort upgrades. And finally, JCB has added two new 7 meter loadals offering up to 24% more lift capacity with options up to 5.5 tons. Loads of stuff to get in there, but some really exciting movements there. When I say it's the biggest show in the world, it is like a size of a field, this convention centre. It's massive. Hannah, finally, what have you got for us? I hear there's some goings on within the AHDB itself.
There is indeed, Tom. So big news here at AHDB. We've just announced our new chief executive, Helen Herneman, and she'll be joining us on the 5th of January. And I think it's fair to say we're all really excited about this. Helen's got loads of experience from both public and private sectors, including senior roles at the Law Society, and the Nursing and Midwifery Council. So she's no stranger to leading organisations through big change. On behalf of the Ag Show, we're very much looking forward to welcoming Helen aboard. And maybe we can get her on the show to ask her some juicy questions.
Definitely. Can't wait for that.
Now on to more exciting topics. I hear both of you might have done a gap year.
Yeah, we have. I spent a bit of time working in New Zealand. I worked a harvest out there just after I finished Harper, which was great fun. Quite scary at times, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, what was scary then?
I grew up on a livestock farm and we had moderately sized tractors, I would say. So Tom talking about 500 horsepower machinery earlier, nothing like that. In the first couple of weeks of working on this cropping farm, as they call it out there, it's not arable, it's cropping. One of the farm managers said to me, Hannah, if you just come with me and we'll go and do something different. I was like, okay, yeah, fine. He took me into a field and there was a combine there. And he said, all right, you're going to get in that and drive that. I was like, what? I've never driven a combine before. I know how to drive a tractor, but like little ones. I'm not going to do a Kiwi accent, but he was like, oh yeah, you'll be right. You'll be right. It's fine. And then he plonked me in the seat and off I went. He had to take a phone call and he said, I've just got to take this. You'll be fine, won't you? I was like, yeah, okay. So I ended up doing the full season on a combine and it was awesome. It was fantastic. But yeah, a bit of a learning curve.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah.
Tom, where was yours?
I was out in Australia. So I'd somehow managed to volunteer myself. I managed to find a Facebook page that was posting about jobs and managed to get myself on a dairy farm. I'm originally from East Kent in the UK, where I can tell you now there aren't very many dairy farms, if any. So I was thrown in a bit at the deep end, but I think I know my way around a cow. But yeah, it was a 50-point rotary dairy. It was huge, quite getting used to. And by the end of my, I think I was 3.5 months there. By the end of my time, I was basically doing it myself with a bit of help to push the cows up at the end. But I went home and sort of talked to people about the dairy farming. And I quite quickly realised that 50-point rotary dairy is huge. It is no small feat. And I suddenly realised almost how privileged I was to have worked on such a system. But yeah, early mornings, I think, will I be a dairy farmer in the future? I don't envy them is all I'll say.
Yeah. Using Facebook and social media is a key thing that when we spoke to Charlie Beatty, who's our guest this week, she was mentioning that was a really good tool to use to find jobs abroad. So Charlotte and I recently caught up with Charlie, formerly of Warwickshire, but now she's living and working in New Zealand. And she told us about her gap year, which began 8 years ago.
I'd finished university, I'd done my placement year with Class UK and I'd gone back to them for the summer before I'd gone out to Australia. And the whole idea behind that was that they'd offered me a graduate role and I turned it down to travel initially. And they said, well, why don't we set you up in Australia or New Zealand? You go out there and do 6 months with them and then you come back and do your graduate role with us and you come and take a job with us. And I was like, oh, great, brilliant. Yeah, 6 months is ages. And I flew out to Australia in September 2017, and I swear within about 3 hours of landing I knew that 6 months just wasn't going to be long enough.
And talk to me about a typical day in the life. What kind of stuff were you up to when you were working for Class?
Yeah, so when I was in the UK I was dealership based. I lived and worked up in Lincolnshire, covered Lincolnshire and Yorkshire, and I was mainly doing sales assistance. So I was most of my time was spent driving demonstrator units for sales guys and sales team on farm. So that was a lot of driving tractors, cultivation kit, the odd combine, but less of that because the salesmen like to do that themselves, because obviously that's a big fun one. Out in Australia, I came out here to drive combine demonstrator units, so combine harvesters, Class Lexion. So it was very much in at the deep end, really, because I'd not done too much combine driving. I'd done a little bit. And then that summer beforehand, I remember saying to Class UK, like, I need to spend some time on a combine. Like, I'm not getting any time on a combine and you're sending me out to Australia to demonstrate them, to show farmers how to use them. Please let me have some time on a combine. So I think I got like 2 days, which is not really that long, maybe a couple of more. But and then flew out. But luckily, I was already in a bit of a one-up position because the sales team that I was working with out here had absolutely no idea what to do with the combine anyway. So I started all right anyway. That doesn't not mean I was perfect. I had, a few
Whoopsies.
Whoopsies? Do you care to elaborate on that maybe for us?
No, the soil that they're growing out of is pretty much sand. It's not really soil. And we're going along, driving a big flash, brand new Fast Lexion 760 with a 40-foot header on it. And there was this bigger mound of sand. And in hindsight, you don't just get a bigger mound of sand for no reason. Like, but at the time, I didn't have that hindsight and everything was going quite quickly. I just went to kind of skim off the top of this mound of sand as I've done with, you know, little ones, and it was going to be fine. And then until it wasn't. And there was no tree root under this mound of sand. This tree root just kind of hooked on the header, and it wasn't a small one, so it just kind of bent a bit. The actual header suffered very little damage. And then we took the header off, and the bit of the combine that the header attaches to, so you've got the feeder house, which is where all the grain and the straw goes up, and on the front of the feeder house, you've got the faceplate, and it had just warped the faceplate.
Oh.
Yeah. And it wasn't a warp that we could straighten out. It was a, we need a new faceplate.
Yeah, and that does sound like a whoopsie.
You're in Australia. Yeah, it was a whoopsie. You're in Australia, you know, you don't really just have a parts dealership down the road or a big parts store. From there, I gained the nickname Flexi Lexi. So that stuck with me for the next 6 months, pretty much. Because whilst Australia is a really big place, it's actually also a really small place. Everybody yeah. knows everybody, especially in the farming world. Mm. So yeah, that was my whoopsie.
And we'll hear more from Charlie later on.
But it does work in both directions, as we've been speaking to a Kiwi who's on a predominantly beef and sheep farm over here in the UK in Worcestershire. Ethan Loveridge told us why he'd first travelled over here.
There's always a sense of kind of curiosity with what else is out there, sort of outside of New Zealand. And I think, you know, the world's so accessible now that despite, you know, New Zealand being so far away from everywhere, like the natural sense of curiosity and what's out there is quite a big grab for people. It's always cool to kind of come to the other side of the world and experience what life is like. It's obviously pretty similar with language and food and all that sort of stuff, but it's always interesting to see how life is over here, how things are done differently, or what they, and, you know, hopefully people, if they do it properly, take a little bit back home with them as well from some of their learnings. So yeah, it's always exciting kind of coming to this part of the world and not knowing what, you know, your parents don't know what you're doing, and you can, you know, travel around to so many places.
Ethan explains some of the differences he's noticed in the way we farm here in the UK compared to back home.
You know, when I was here last during the winter, and we're going to do the same now, we're going to be putting the cows into the shed during the winter months. I know in New Zealand that's not very common. A lot of them will keep their herds out in the paddocks all year round. I know dairy farming, they don't milk all year round either. They sort of milk for a small part of the year, and then they'll give them a rest and then kind of get back into it.
But Ethan feels it's not that straightforward to get into farming back home.
Well, it's like if you've got a decent enough reference and, you know, you knew the right people, it can be easy. In terms of sort of studying agriculture in New Zealand, it can be a little bit tricky. I know there was a farming college back home called Teretahi that kind of closed its doors a few years ago. It was struggling for funding, and that was historically a really big agricultural training centre. My dad went there, and I knew several other relatives that and friends that had studied there as well. So that kind of closed down, and that was quite a big sort of kick in the guts for the people who were trying to get into farming.
We'll talk more about gap years a little later, but after the break, we're going to be looking at the recent slump in milk prices.
Hi, I'm Alice Perry. Here's your AHDB News Roundup for the week commencing the 1st of December. Christmas 2025 could be a strong one for red meat and dairy, according to our latest consumer predictions. Shoppers are expected to focus on familiar festive favourites, prioritising quality despite budgetary pressure. But beef market updates do show that price inflation is easing. Retail demand has steadied, with shoppers returning to certain cuts as prices become more manageable. Levy payers are invited to help ratify new sector council members. Voting is open from the 1st to the 12th of December, and levy payers are encouraged to take part to ensure broad representation. New recommended lists for cereals and oilseeds are now live, with updated variety options for growers and reflecting changes in yield performance, market demand, and agronomic priorities. The latest crop development report also shows strong planting progress and good early crop condition for harvest 2026. That's all for now. For more, visit ahdb.org.uk.
Hi, George Kendall, an arable farmer in Northamptonshire. We finished our autumn drilling campaign just over 3 weeks ago and all the crops have established nicely this year. Given the weather we've had this autumn, the drilling went really well and we've just got the last few fields that need spraying now, so before we can shut the gates for winter. Start looking towards winter jobs now, so currently moving a bit of pig muck onto one of our contract farms that will get spread in the spring, ready for spring cropping. We utilise all our solid and slurry off of our pig unit across our farm and our contract farms to reduce our reliance on artificial nitrogen. We've smoothed some grain off farm now, but given market prices, we're not really keen to sell too much, but for cash flow reasons, we're needing to sell and make the most of what we can.
Welcome back to the Ag Show. It was great to hear from George there. A particular shout out for him. He's only 26 years old and is managing his arable enterprise, and he's not from a farming background. So very interesting to see as well about the ups and downs. I know with the arable price being as it is, that it being not the time you want to sell, but when cash flow calls, you sometimes have to. But we are always after your farming stories. And if you want to, like George, have your say on a future episode, please email us agshow@hdb.org.uk. Right, let's talk about dairy prices. They've been all over the news recently, and here at HDB, we are talking about them a lot too. Our lead analyst, Susie Stannard, is the best person to be asking about anything there is to do about dairy on a normal day, but also about when the prices are doing what they are currently doing. So for the who, what, where, how, we've got Susie to give us a bit of a lowdown.
British dairy farmers have been in for a shock in recent weeks as many milk processors have announced some dramatic cuts in milk prices. Falls of 8 or 9 pence per litre so far are not uncommon. Aligned and organic less so, and some processors have cut less severely, so there is quite a disparity, a 16 pence gap between the top and the bottom of the league table at the moment. This ends the unusual situation in the past 12 to 18 months where prices have been quite high and stable. We've now got a huge oversupply situation in the UK. The milk year to date was up over 5%, currently over 7% for the UK. This was driven by a really favourable milk to feed price ratio, and the drought meant supplementing with extra feed as well. We got away with it through most of the year as milk supplies in Europe were back due to the impact of blue tongue virus. But they're now booming in Europe due to delayed calving post-blue tongue in Germany, France and the Netherlands, as well as really strong growth in the US, which is growing due to 250,000 more cows and much more cheese-making capacity coming online, which has been driving cheap cheese, but also cheap butter. So much milk around has put pressure on commodity prices, both here and in Europe, and we've seen some massive declines across the piece. Butter fell about £2,000 a tonne, cream £1,000 a tonne, cheddar £1,200 a tonne. These are huge numbers, and that has really squeezed the value of milk and the prices that can go back to farmers. Ampey and McVee are now down to about 35 pence per litre. At the same time, the US is producing both butter and cheese more cheaply, selling at about 50% discount over EU butter, for example. This is putting pressure on imports. It's a difficult situation for everybody. Processors are losing money, farmers are losing money. For farms with big falls in milk prices, controlling costs will be key, as well as making the most of their current contract. One processor this week told me that the difference between their top and bottom 10% of farms was 8 pence per litre. This is on the same contract. This is due to meeting fat and protein requirements, milk hygiene and so on. Attention to detail is critical now. We'll also expect to see more culling decisions as the beef price is strong and forage stocks are low for many. Dairy farmers are resilient, but there are very testing few months ahead. If farmers are worried about their contracts or that they are not being treated fairly, they can raise it with the Agriculture Supply Chain Adjudicator's Office under the terms of the Fair Dealing Obligations of Milk legislation.
We've just heard from Susie. We're now joined by Sophie Gregory. Now, Sophie, I think it's a great point that actually, if you could introduce yourself first for our listeners, we get your hot takes on some of these topics which we've brought up.
Yeah, so I'm Sophie Gregory. I'm a dairy farmer down on the Dorset-Devon border. We've milked one farm organic, and one farm conventional. So we've got a foot in both camps. We're Arla members and been dairy farming for about 11 years now.
Susie talked a lot about milk prices and what's going on in the market at the moment and what's driving it. How are those milk price changes affecting your businesses? And you say you've got two different setups, one conventional, one organic. Could you just sort of talk us through how the market's affecting your enterprises at the moment?
The organic, we had a really bad period during 22, 23. You know, it was about 44p we hit, and that was, you know, well below cost of production. And it was quite a painful period. It went on for a prolonged period. We've had quite a good run for the last probably year now, but I think people are only just gaining confidence back now because that period really tipped some people. We lost a lot of members in that period that actually converted back to conventional. So sort of it, the market played out as in some people left and then we got short of milk, price went back up again. But we are, you know, we're in a really good position at the moment. Growth has been strong in the market in terms of consumption. My worry is depends how many people convert to organic. Now we do see this. We see, you know, the price drops on conventional. People are attracted by the organic price and they think, yeah, I'll have a go at that. We've got to really learn from the past that we don't want to sort of grow it really extremely and then have the same again. Pretty even across processors on price wise, which is kind of helping, especially being an Arla member, because some of our organic milk price is made up of the conventional. So keeping us competitive with our peers is really important. And then going on to the conventional, I mean, no one is really producing milk under 30p anymore. And when I started dairy farming, the best of the best were doing 20p. So we've come, like, inflationary costs have really gone up. So that does concern me that, you know, how low are we going to go? We obviously also bought cows. So we started this dairy in August. We bought cows at a pretty high milk price. And now we're sort of, we haven't been as sharp falling. Arla hasn't been as sharp falling. We've got our brands, we've invested in brands, and we've been slower compared to other processors. And I feel very lucky to be part of a co-op. And that, you know, that's why the beauty of supplying a co-op is quite transparent. But, you know, it will play out. And we've had a lot of startup costs. So I just, it for us, it's quite a painful period. But we are lucky to have our foot in the organic. So the sister business will very much be holding the hand of the other one for this period. But my thoughts really are that these milk cycles are sort of getting shorter and shorter. We seem to see them more frequently, but they don't go on as long. There seems to be more and more factors that affect. And we're very much in a global market, whether we like it or not. Dependent, it doesn't matter really who you supply, but you are very much in a global market now. So yeah, those are my reflections at the moment on the milk price. I mean, how much lower we'll go, I wouldn't like to predict.
What levers have you got as a farmer that are potentially facing these kind of price falls to pull to manage that in the best way you can for your business?
I think it's getting back to basics, Hannah. I think we, you know, naturally as people, not saying everyone, but if we have a prolonged period of high milk price, we probably sort of open our belt a bit to costs. And I think it's great to invest in good times. You do want to invest, so it's easier in lower times. You know, we've put in some grids, make slurry handling easier, etc., and that will release some labour. But sort of really knuckling down on those core costs for me will be what we do. Especially, you know, even that the organic's still pretty strong, it's now time for me to really look at that too, because I can, you know, we just don't know what's around the corner.
Thank you so much, Sophie. That's really interesting and really good to see on farm what's actually happening and some of the implications for a dairy farmer in the UK.
Hi, I'm Annabelle Twinbarrow, analyst at the AHDB, here with a look at the domestic dairy market for the week commencing 1st of December. GB milk volumes have continued to show record highs. So far this milk year, deliveries are ahead by 5.5% compared to the previous year. Milk supplies are now building both domestically and globally. As a result, we have witnessed a series of sharp falls in UK wholesale prices. The average butter price lost another £390 a tonne in November, now sitting at £4,290 a tonne, a significant decline from the almost £7,000 a tonne seen last autumn. Bulk cream prices followed suit, with average pricing sitting £234 a tonne lower in November compared to October. Mild cheddar has seen a monthly average price decrease of around £150 a tonne to £2,960 a tonne, and SMP eased back £20 a tonne month on month. At the farm gate, some British dairy farmers have been hit hard. Milk processors announced dramatic price cuts for November, December and into next year. For the latest data and analysis on red meat, dairy and arable markets, head to ahdb.org.uk and click on Markets and Prices.
So we're back for Field Agents. Martin, what's our crazy acronym this week?
Yes, Field Agents, Farming Industry Explained Language Decoded Agents. Tom, I'm going to go straight to you, Agent Tom, as you did a sterling job last week. This week's acronym, APPGSTA. Is that APGSTAR? I mean, it's as long as supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Does it make as much sense, though, Tom?
It's got to be a record there. I know it's only week two, but we're going to struggle to beat this one. Yes, APPGSTA. That's the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Science and Technology in Agriculture. Try saying that twice quickly. So this is a cross-parliamentary group of officials who have been working together on a few reports. Most notably that's come out this week is the 30-50-50. That's a report chaired by George Freeman that is designed to take a look at agriculture and look at how we can increase productivity by 30%, reduce our emissions by 50% by 2050. That's 30-50-50. But also this group has been in the news as they were the people who first led on the new Genetic Technology Act 2023, which is all around gene editing crops and the legislation behind that. So a big step in that, in the fact that it comes into force as of the 13th of November. So very exciting. But yes, to recap, APPGSTA, the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Science and Technology in Agriculture.
You heard it here first. Thank you very much, Agent Tom. If you've got an acronym or a confusing term that you want to have explained to one and all, then email the show, agshow@ahdb.org.uk.
So we've been a bit around the globe on this episode today. Sophie, I believe you're probably the most well-travelled in this room, perhaps. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, not meaningfully. It sounds like I'm really bad for the planet saying that, doesn't it? But no, I've just finished a Nuffield Farming Scholarship, so I really took the travel part seriously. So yes, I have been to some very weird and wonderful countries, including Azerbaijan, Taiwan, you know, some really out there ones.
And we've talked a lot about gap years in this episode. And Sophie, I don't believe you did take a gap year, but it's something that you're quite keen for your son to do. Is that right?
Yeah. So, no, I had a baby instead of a gap year. Harry, my eldest, is now 16. He's dead keen on farming and wants to come back to the farm when he's done his A-levels. And I very much said to him, you know, come back when you're about 22. Go and get another boss, go and travel, go and see the world, things that we didn't do at that age, which we probably regret a bit, but it wasn't really possible. So yeah, just go out there and see the world, because I think it just gives you a totally different perspective of life. And I think it's just so important, especially when you're young and you don't have ties. I think you'll never regret any travel you do.
There's so much to be learnt in that time away, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And he might not want to do dairying, and that's totally fine. You know, he might find that he wants, you know, me and Tom are still quite young, my husband. So, you know, he might come back with lots of weird and wonderful ideas for the farm. So I'm, you know, we're very open. We're tenants. So it very much, you know, it's all to play for.
And it would be remiss of me not to mention, you've also, like us, got your own podcast, isn't that right?
Yeah. It always feels a bit cringe to shout about your own stuff. But yes, we've got a farming podcast called Meet the Farmers, The Big Debate. Just launched it, kindly sponsored by Virgin Money. And yeah, we're just getting going. Like you guys, we're just released episode 2. So we're going to be talking about some of the sort of contentious issues in agriculture at the moment and just bringing it back to the farm, really. Trying not to be too serious. Some of it will be lighthearted, some of it will be pretty deep, I suppose.
Sophie, thank you so much for joining us on the Ag Show. It's been fantastic to have you, and we wish you all the best of luck with all your farming endeavours. It's now time to hear a bit more from Charlie Beattie, whose original gap year to Australia led her to a permanent move to New Zealand. She told us she's feeling quite settled.
Never say never, but I'm pretty positive as it stands that this is home now, and this is where I will spend my life. It's not just the state of agriculture. You know, the way of life is different as well. It's a lot more relaxed. It's a It's a lot more you work to live rather than live to work, something we're not so good at in the UK. We definitely live to work a lot more.
Are the farmers different in Australia and New Zealand, or are they the same as they are over here?
Probably say they're pretty much the same. I think the mindset's a little bit different. We've probably got a bit more of a positive mindset over here. We've just gone through a really tough time in the sheep and beef space here in New Zealand, and the price has been on the floor. So that's been really, really tough for sheep and beef farmers particularly. And you find out here as well, people don't do mixed farming like we do in the UK. There is a bit of it, but people generally tend to stick to arable, stick to sheep and beef, stick to dairy. Especially where I'm from, we kind of like to dabble a little bit in everything. And I think there's merits to both ways. You know, I feel like out here, people tend to just do what they're good at and do what the farm's well suited to. Whereas in the UK, we try to put all of our eggs in different baskets, which works because not all industry, you know, we never really get it so that every industry is strong at the same time. So that does balance the risk a bit. In the UK, I find that we have families that have been on farms for generations and generations, and you're really attached to that farm. And I feel like in the UK, we try and change the farm to suit what we're good at rather than farming to the way that the farm is best suited. Whereas over here in New Zealand, they don't have those sentimental ties to the farms. If they're getting to a point where their farming style doesn't suit the farm and something better comes up, they'll move.
So I kind of feel like working abroad's almost a little bit of a rite of passage for a lot of ag students. I mean, it was 2017 when you first made your journey down under. Has there been an influx of students coming over, or other people perhaps coming to sample a different way of life?
100%. I remember when I came out, so many of us travelled out to Australia and New Zealand when we finished Harper. And I remember because I went over to New Zealand from Australia for Christmas and New Year one year, and I spent New Year in Queenstown. And every corner you turned, it was someone from uni, and you're like, "Oh, what are you doing here?" And it was like a bit of a uni reunion.
And for anyone that's listening or watching this episode, and that's thinking of doing a gap year or working abroad on farm or doing anything like the kind of things you've done, from a seasoned professional such as yourself, have you got any tips or nuggets of wisdom for people that might want to go out and do something similar?
Facebook is your friend, or Twitter or Instagram. When I came out in early 2020 and did my study scholarship from the National Sheep Association, I spent 6 weeks going from farm to farm, and the contacts I made and the farms I visited were all pretty much all from Twitter. And I've never been a Twitter user, but I knew that actually there was quite a good range of maybe farmers the generation above me that were really active on Twitter. And I went on there and I kind of made a bit of a post that this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm studying, is there anyone that would be willing to host me between these dates, you know, a couple of days work in return for a bit of B&B. Utilize that, put yourself out there. There's always posts on Facebook now. And then probably the other big tip is look at the visa requirements as well. Look at how long it's going to take you to get your visa. You know, don't start looking in August and expect to fly out in September, because it's probably going to take you a little bit longer to get your visa, or, you know, just give yourself that time.
I think that's all we've got time for today, guys. We've been all over the place, haven't we, this time? We've been to New Zealand. We've been to Australia.
Azerbaijan.
Oh, yeah. Azerbaijan.
Taiwan.
Yeah, everywhere. We've touched every corner of the globe. We've covered a lot of detail on dairy markets and what's going on there. And if anyone listening would like to find out more about dairy prices, what's going on in the market, please do head to our website, hdb.org.uk, markets and prices. And if you scroll down to dairy, you can see all our analysis and insight there. And please do get in touch with us. We really want to hear from you. agshow@hdb.org.uk is the email address you need. And don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time, guys.